Hey everybody, David Hayward. Welcome to the Lasting Supper podcast. Today I'm interviewing a member of the Lasting Supper, Jason Lorato, who lives in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, with the love of his life, Rosie, who's also a member of the Lasting Supper.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad, Jason. How are you?
Not too bad.
Awesome. Where are you?
I'm sitting at home on my deck on the third floor.
Sounds nice.
It is. It's a nice day. It's not too hot. It's about 16 or 17 degrees. It's nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm out here in St. John, and it's overcast and cloudy and not very nice today.
Ah, shoot.
Yeah. So, your pictures with you and your wife are always hilarious.
That's one word for it, yeah.
My favorite picture of you guys is with cigarettes stuck in your nostrils.
I remember that, yeah. I remember you saying that.
Yeah. So, demons.
Yeah. I guess you didn't know that about me, huh?
No, I did know that, actually. Don't you remember, it was some time ago, I think it was when, even before you joined the Lasting Supper, you asked me a question and asked my opinion, I think, about demons or whatever.
Okay.
That was quite a long time ago.
Yeah, I think it was.
But anyway, hey, everybody who's listening, this is Jason. He's a member of the Lasting Supper, and we were chatting back and forth on Facebook. Something about Bob Larson's daughters being exorcists, and somebody, you mentioned, I mentioned that I'd been involved in some exorcisms in my life, and then you said the same thing, and then some people wanted to hear your story. So we ended up just, you know, suddenly deciding to Skype each other. So here we are, and totally unplanned. And so we're just starting from scratch. So people want to hear your story.
Wow. Is there people listening right now besides you and me?
No. It's not live, but it's just being recorded.
Oh, cool. Okay, great. Well, ask questions. I'm here. I don't know how this works, but I'm an open book.
Yeah, well, just talk. Like, what's your story? You came out of, or were you in the vineyard?
I attended Vineyard, but you know what? I grew up in the Mennonite background.
Oh, okay.
My first legal last name was Friesen, and then about a year ago, Rosie and I decided to change our last name legally because we didn't want the negative. In Manitoba, there's a lot of negative ties to the word, any Mennonite name.
Okay.
So we wanted to get rid of that stereotype and create our own name, and here we are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so growing up in that, I mean, it was extremely religious. You know, we all know what that means, who was listening, but...
Yeah.
In the Mennonite church, exactly, you know, even more so, you know, in terms of you get excommunicated if you, you know, get someone pregnant. You know, one of our youth group members, two of our youth had a bit of an intimate moment. She got pregnant and they were forced to go up front and, you know, spill their guts and then excommunicated right away. So it was just, it was terrible growing up that way.
So that's where you began. You began in the Mennonite church, and Rosie did too?
Yeah, we both did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she grew up in a small little town called Grunthal, Manitoba.
Uh-huh.
So those who are from Manitoba, I think there's one in your group from Manitoba. And
at least.
She would know where that is. But, yeah, and then, you know, if I just skip ahead a little bit, you know, I went to Bible college in here in Manitoba, and a Mennonite college. And at that college is where I had my first encounter of a demon, and I had to basically make a choice. Do I believe it's real? Or do I just run away like most people would?
Uh-huh.
And the story goes, this guy named, also David, I drove him to Winnipeg every Friday to see his mom over the weekend. And then he'd come back and I'd drive him back Sunday.
Yeah.
And this one, he usually talks like crazy. On this one trip back home, or sorry, back to the college, he didn't say a word. He was in the back seat, just quiet.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought he had a bad weekend, so I didn't make anything of it.
Uh-huh.
We get to the dorm and we open up our trunk. And he's got a big hockey bag full of his laundry and a small little gym bag. So he picked the big one. I picked the small one to go inside. And as soon as he crosses the threshold of the dorm, he starts heaving really heavy. And I just thought, wow, that's a heavy bag. Get to his room, and he throws it on the ground and just starts growling and rolling. And, I mean, it was now. And I made the choice to stay and find out what the Bible said, if it's true or not.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a couple hours later, he was set free. I thought, wait a minute, this is wild. You know, I was scared, but at the same time, I figured, let's just see what happens. And ever since then, till about, I'd say, 3-4 years ago, I would do easy 3 to 5 deliverances a week. And I never advertised it. I didn't put it out there. It just started to flow. And it got so busy where I actually got invited to Montreal. So I spent a week in Montreal teaching this stuff. I was invited to Providence Theological Seminary for an evening class to teach us the seminary students and the college students. And that was a very weird, interesting experience in itself. And I was invited to Tennessee for a month to teach this stuff. So I flew down there and spent a month traveling around Tennessee and teaching it to different churches and people. And then I was invited to Africa, but I turned that one down.
So Jason, here on the Last Link software, I know some people are going to be, oh yeah, okay, sure, no problem. Then other people are going to be like, what the fuck? Like, because there's, you know, as you know, there's quite a diversity of people represented here, and everything from believing people who go to church to atheists who don't and don't believe in anything supernatural. So this stuff is really going to be kind of interesting, you know, interesting to a lot of people.
Controversial.
Controversial for sure. Well, yeah. I grew up in the Baptist church. Well, I didn't grow up. I actually became a Christian when I was, or a born-again Christian, that is. I was baptized Christian as a baby, but born-again Christian around 15 or 16 years old. And I went to a Baptist church, and the pastor there was really into demons, you know?
Wow.
No, demons weren't into him. There's a difference. He was into demons. But he read things like Satan is alive and well on planet Earth, and, you know, he was involved in a lot of exorcisms, and he had recordings of exorcisms, and I was fascinated in this stuff. So I, you know, was just eating this stuff up right, left and center. And he even did some sort of weekend conferences on demonology and Satanism and all this kind of stuff. So,
oh yeah. I mean, I got stories. I'm sure I could tie you up for 2 hours just on what I've experienced in the past 20 years.
What are your thoughts on demons now? You said on Facebook there that your ideas have changed somewhat.
Yeah, they sure have changed a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know, from there, I was a youth pastor for 5 years. You know, a paid full time youth pastor in the Mennonite Church, and
okay,
you know, and it's just when I was forced to resign, you know, I did my final message and I knew I was going to get fired for it, and I just didn't give a shit. And I got fired the next day. I got 6 letters from the loud people and the negative people, and says, if you don't quit, we're going to force you out. And ever since then.
What did you do to bring this on again?
I was asked to preach a message. I preach about once a month there.
Uh-huh.
And this final one, I just had it on my heart to, I guess, nail it to them.
Uh-huh.
And I sure did. And I'd say 90% loved it. And the 10% that are really loud are usually the ones that win. And the 10% that was loud and negative and hated me for it forced me out the next day. So, and you know, I knew it was going to happen. I just knew it. Uh-huh. And I was okay. I was okay with it. But after that point, I actually went from being a youth pastor and promoting God in church and all this stuff to actually being completely on the other side and preaching against church, preaching against God. I was angry.
Uh-huh.
Very mad. And, you know, I had completely ignored and walked away and denied, and, you know, I was labeled going to hell for it, backslidden, you name it.
Were you married at the time?
I was. Yeah, we were married. You know, my marriage, you know, I won't get into it here, but I was a roommate. I slept in the bed in a separate bedroom for 5 years, the last 5 years, because I snored.
Okay.
Yeah, from there, I just started, you know, I started reading a book called So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore.
Oh yeah,
I forget the author's name, but that kind of woke me up a little bit in terms of what church is doing is wrong, mm-hmm. how they're manipulating, and I witnessed it firsthand as a youth pastor.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, still doing deliverances, you know, every single week in the church, in the area, in the community, and my biggest actually love, if you want to call it that, were those in the occult. I knew so much about what goes on in the satanic occult that I surprised them what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to draw them out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And and then over the years, you know, I started to really question faith and the Bible and God.
Right.
And now I don't have a label. Some would call me a universal reconciliationist. Some would call me wacko, whatever. But
yeah,
it's a weird journey that I'm on now. I've never had more peace now, actually, than prior. I didn't have peace before.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was a terrible youth pastor, I call myself. And as you know, I was a trucker for many years, and still trucking every now and then. And I was a better, if you want to call it, a better Christian on the road than I was as a youth pastor.
So, but, how has all this changed? Like your latest journey, how has all this changed? As you said, your ideas about demons and stuff like that.
Well, now I just wonder, you know, if how do I start with that one? I guess I question whether it's actually demonic forces or if it's just our negative minds or, you know, the mm-hmm. universe. You know, mm-hmm. you got negative energy, you got positive energy. And,
yeah,
you know, I've been reading a lot of Eckhart Tolle stuff and Deepak Chopra. And mm-hmm. so it makes me question what I did before. Was it actually demonic or was it just some negative personalities or character traits in people that I was able to turn around rather than demons?
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, I did one last major deliverance about two years ago, and I didn't expect to do it because it was kind of drying out, and it was the biggest one I've ever done yet. Uh-huh. And it really threw me for a loop again in terms of, okay, wait a minute, is this actually demonic or is this, you know, still in the mind?
Do you want to tell that story or not?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Might as well lay it out there, Jason. Let's hear it.
Oh, boy. Okay. Everybody ready for the campfire story? Here we go. Yeah, I was...
You tell yours, and then I'll tell some of mine.
Okay, sounds good. I met this lady named Doreen. She was probably in her early 60s kind of thing, and I went to her place. I knew she had stage 2 or stage 3 cancer. She was white as a ghost and, you know, on her deathbed kind of look. Mm-hmm. And she invited me to her house. And once we got started, you know, I don't do it the Bob Larson way. I don't like to make a show out of things. I've learned through the years. My mentor was Steve Masterson from Promise Keepers. And so for 8 years, him and I would meet every week, and he taught me some of what he knew. And it opened my eyes back when I was doing deliverances in terms of binding their hands and their feet so they couldn't show off. And, you know, I didn't want to do the Bob Larson route. And so we started the process with Doreen, and immediately the demonic forces came, you know, shone right through her vocal cords and her body language. And, you know, it's not her acting. It's a 180 degree flip, and you know it's not really her. So we're starting the whole process, and she gets angry. The spirit gets angry and picks up something and throws it at me. And I got zero respect for demons, and I mock them because it pisses them off. And I call them the lowest ranking name in the world because it pisses them off and it usually gets them to talk. So I mock them a lot. Mm-hmm. And this one instant, the demon said to Doreen, said, "He's behind you," in a really, you know, growly voice. And I was playing stupid. I kind of knew what it meant. I said, "Who's behind me?" He laughed and he goes, "He's behind you." I said, "Who's he?" "My master." I said, "Who's your master?" And it said, "Beelzebub, Satan. He's literally standing behind you." And I did feel that, you know, I don't have much hair in my head. I shave it off. But what was left was I could feel it standing up. I knew there was some entity or some force behind me. You know, my, if you want to call it, my old religious ways kicked in for a second. And I just lifted up my foot as a symbolic motion, and I smashed it on the ground. And I said, "He's nothing. He's beneath my feet," and I just crushed him. "I'm not worried." And it was gone. That demon suddenly was just petrified, because I guess it was hoping I'd be scared that, oh my goodness, this guy standing before me, Jason, is not afraid of this, my master, if it was in fact him. And it lasted for about 2 or 3 hours, and I'm missing a lot of details, mind you, but
sure.
It was the most eye-opening experience happened after that. And I asked the demon a question about the reconciliation of all, because if I believe in reconciliation of all, that would mean, if there's demons, demons. And so I just said to him, I said, "Are you sorry that you followed Lucifer from heaven to where you are now?" And suddenly I saw remorse on a spirit's face, and it was not her still. And it said, "Yes." I said, "So you regret following his lead? You regret that whole..." And he goes, "Yes." And I said, "Do you believe that God will reconcile you?" And the demon looked at me square in the eye, still with the same aggression, but I had remorse still. And I said, "Yes, I do. I know I'm going home to him." But he said, "It'll be a long time, and I'll be tormented until I get there." And I was taken aback by that, because this Doreen lady was a staunch Catholic, and I don't know if Catholics believe in all that, but that wouldn't have come from her mouth. We ended the session, and we both went on our ways, and a couple months later, I went to a restaurant in Winnipeg, and she was there with a bunch of her sisters, and she was ignoring me. I thought, okay, did I do something wrong? Did I fart? Like, what's going on? And her sisters came to my table and says, "Did you hear what happened to Doreen?" I said, "No." She went to the doctor after you guys met. She's got zero cancer left in her body. Huh. And I said, get out of here. So I went to Doreen's table and she started crying and she looked, you know, her color was back in her skin. She was happy as ever. And she said, yeah, I just don't want to make a big deal out of it, Jason. I didn't want to blow your ego up and tell you that the cancer was gone. So, yeah, you know, I constantly question whether the spiritual realm is what it is, what I knew, or, yeah. And it went from, like I said, 3 to 5 a week down to last time I did it was probably 2 years ago.
Well, actually, you mentioned the Roman Catholic Church. They actually have professional exorcists.
Yeah.
Like that's their job.
Absolutely.
Just like the movie, The Exorcist, it was a Roman Catholic priest in that movie. And that's actually true. They have real exorcists. And every once in a while, they'll pop up in the news where they actually perform exorcisms and stuff.
Yeah.
It is strange. No, I you know, I've been involved in exorcisms and seen people really act strangely and totally out of character and different voices and weird body movements. And, you know, at that time, of course, I believed the whole lock, stock, and barrel. But I'm kind of like you now where I feel we're all connected, that even we are somehow even connected to that which we would call God or the divine, and that there's no separation and between us and what is good and the ultimate and the ground of our being and all that. And so it would have to hold true as well for, you know, that which we would think is evil, I think is, like you were saying, the super negative dark aspects of our character that we're not aware of or whatever. I mean, it's profound. You know, I'm like you. I've seen really weird shit, you know, like very, very strange stuff that, wow, can you make this stuff up? Can you pretend this? Can you manufacture this?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, in the years I've done this stuff, I've seen grown women picked up off the ground and pinned against the wall, 3 feet in the air, and nothing is holding them there. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you explain that, right? So I can't just chuck it all out, and I'm just dissecting it now, I guess you can say.
Tell us more about your story. You left the Mennonite church, and how long ago was that?
About 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. After that, you know, my marriage fell apart, and you know, I made a mistake. I had an affair, and I lived with that woman for 5 years. I think you've actually met her, and you know, just kind of through that process. You know, it's a big journey, you know, I've been on, and I don't know if I call myself Baha'i. I think Baha'i, you know, calls, you know, they look at truth in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think there's truth in everything. I think there's nuggets of truth in Buddhism. There's nuggets of truth in the Muslim faith in terms of what they, you know, what they do. And so it's really taken away my judgment from people.
Yeah.
Which has been awesome. You know, right after I left the church, I became a bouncer. You know, I'm 6'6", 330 pounds, and look like a badass biker. And so I just fit the bouncer mold. And it was wild because I talked more about God's love, grace, not judgment, not that bullshit, but just love than I did as a youth pastor. And people were hungry for it in the bars.
Yeah.
So that became, I hate the word ministry, but that became where I was doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And it was awesome. You know, it was great.
Yeah.
And because of my height, didn't have to get into fights. It was even better.
You're 6'6" what?
I'm 6'6".
Holy crow.
Yeah, I'm a white Michael Jordan. I just can't jump as high. Yeah.
Wow, 6'6". So what are you doing now? You
know,
Rosie?
We are living in the heart. I don't know if you heard of Osborne Village, but it's kind of Winnipeg's alternative place to live. There's per capita more gay and lesbian couples in this area than anywhere in Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
And we absolutely love it here. You know, 5 years ago, I would have, you know, tried to preach to them that they're going to hell for that lifestyle. And today we have close friends who are two men who are getting married soon. And
yeah,
it's just a beautiful place to live. Extremely safe and wild culturally. And it's just awesome. And,
yeah.
You know, Rosie's a chef at the Canada Inn hotel chain here in Manitoba.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's enjoying that. She kind of lucked out. She used to be a general manager of Pizza Hut and a few other places. And so generally, if you're a chef, you have to go years and years of culinary college.
Yeah.
But because of her experience, she got hired as a chef on the spot. without college, so other people are mad at her.
Wow.
Yeah, and for me, I'm in a job transition. I'm going to go back on the road, but just locally. Instead of being gone for a week or two at a time, I'll be gone for one night twice a week.
Okay.
So
that's cool.
Yeah, I get to do what I enjoy. I actually enjoy trucking.
Yeah.
And get to get paid good for it, so it's going to work out.
Hey, Jason, it's interesting how, don't you think, like on The Lasting Supper, just the wide variety of people that are represented there and how some people are noticing that many of us have come from a sort of a fundamentalist, evangelical, even charismatic background. Others have come from like a more mainline Presbyterian, Roman Catholic United or Methodist or something. And then there are others who haven't even had a Christian background, like Buddhists and so on. But it's interesting how your journey has brought you to this place of you're wondering if you're a universalist, reconciliationist, or whatever. Yeah. It's just kind of fascinating to me how pretty rapidly the changes that we go through, don't you think?
It's amazing.
It's like growing pains. It almost hurts.
It does. Yeah, it does. You know, I put a question yesterday on your wall about, you know, what have you gained and lost since you've come out, if you want to call it that. And, you know, I really resonate with a lot of people there because, we've lost, both Rosie and I have lost probably 90% of our friends.
Yeah.
And that hurts, you know, going from a social life to wondering, what are we going to do tonight? You know, who are we going to call? Oh, nobody. Okay. So, I mean, that's become tough.
Yeah.
But like I said before, Rosie and I have a piece about us that we haven't had before.
Yeah.
And it's neat, you know, those naysayers who, those religious who say, well, you're going off the deep end, God is not with you anymore. Well, God, being entity, whatever you want to call him, it's there, you know, he's not leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And we have shitty days, but so does everybody else.
Hey, I don't know if you want to say anything about this or not, but and it's up to you. But
sure.
A lot of people that I've interviewed lately for the podcast, this is just pretty much the way you said it. You said, I left the church and then my marriage fell apart.
Yep.
And that's happened to a lot of people. What's up with that?
Our marriage fell apart from the honeymoon, believe it or not. You know, growing up in the church, you know, we were taught that it was wrong to have premarital sex. And so we were both virgins and it was... You know, how do I get into it? Sex isn't everything.
Yeah.
But when it's 3 to 5 times a year, it starts to affect everything. Not a month, but a year. And it started falling apart from the honeymoon. I knew something was wrong. And so it just continued that way all the way through the 12 years we were married. And we had 2 children out of it, and I call them miracle children because I had to hit it just right. And sorry for the bluntness, but, you know, I had to. And, it just really fell apart that way. And, you know, when I left the church and started working in the financial business, you know, I used to own my own financial company for 6 years and had staff across Canada. And, it was then that I met this other woman and, made a foolish mistake. You know, it's, the wrong way to end a marriage. And, you know, I'm grown up enough to man it and man up and say, I did it wrong.
Uh-huh.
And, that's how it fell apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, lived that life with her for 5 years and woke up for a second time, awakened again that, you know, this isn't the right relationship either.
Uh-huh.
And moved on from that one. So it's been a lot of learning curves. You know, at first I thought I was going to go to hell for leaving a marriage and having an affair and going through that process. I lost my family in the process, you know, in terms of my parents, my siblings, my aunt and uncles. They wrote me off and it was quite... verbally violent for a long time, and they would assault me with emails and texts, and so I really had to learn to either fight back or bite my tongue.
How is all that? Any of that restored? Or
you know, it's been phenomenal since I got in. You know, Rosie and I met 14 years ago when I was a director of a drop-in center, and she and her husband at the time, one of my volunteers. We both, you know, we didn't act upon our feelings for each other because I already had a shitty marriage. I didn't realize that her husband was abusive. He beat your kids and abused her. And I didn't know it then, but we both had this crossing of eyes all the time. And we were both confused as to why we had these feelings, but we never spoke about it. And then 5 years ago, I when my marriage crumbled and hers crumbled, we met once and we talked about it. And we didn't act upon it again. And then finally about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, is when she actually texted me, and we texted each other and just kind of threw on the table saying, and she actually admitted she's been journaling about me for 14 years and that she's been waiting for me for 14 years.
Wow.
So it's kind of one of those movie stories, you know, where you can write a movie about it, a 14-year-old love affair and that never really went anywhere until a year ago or 2 years ago.
Cool.
Yeah, and so that's how we met Rosie. And since she came into my life, my whole family, including my parents and my sister, saw a change in me. You know, I was happy again. And now they're welcoming us with open arms. You know, we're common law. We're not married in terms of the legal government paper. But for some reason, that doesn't matter anymore. They're loving and open and want us down all the time. And
cool.
Even though in their eyes, we're still living in sin, for some reason, they've developed grace.
You guys always look happy in your photographs.
You
guys were going to come out and visit us this summer, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
I know.
We'd love to, though.
Yeah, we'd have fun. We'd have a lot of fun. Yeah. We'd sit around, drink beer, and have some good talks.
That would be great.
Listen, Jason, thanks a lot for talking with me today.
Thank you for, thank you.
I'll try to get this up on the Lasting Supper today. Anything you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to, or is there anything you want to say to the members of the Lasting Supper?
You know, all I got to say is, I mean, I don't know any of them, but of all the six different Facebook groups I belong to, and most of them have to do with universal reconciliation, I go to yours the most. Yours has the most diverse group and grace and love, and it's just awesome. So way to go, you all.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Jason. We'll see you on the Lasting Supper.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
That was Jason Lorato. Wow, you guys are a diverse bunch of people. I love you all, demons and everything. We'll see you back on the Lasting Supper.